Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read. There's no set schedule, it's just roughly once every week and a bit, I guess, is if you average it out. I just read a book by then and I review it and chat about it here on the podcast and upload it onto the internet and people download it and listen to it. That's the idea, except we're not going to get that this time out because this time, this episode is episode number 100. Woo! 100 episodes. Actually, I've done a few more than 100 episodes already because there were some special episodes and some and a half episodes and some guest episodes and things like that. So if you're actually wondering what this Science Fiction Book Review podcast is all about, don't listen to this one. Go away and find a book or look up a normal episode, and one which doesn't have and a half in it or isn't some kind of special. It's just, you know, who's got a title of a book in the title of the podcast and the author, and you know, you work it out that this is not a normal episode. Because I thought I'd like to take this opportunity to share a little bit, not just about what I'm doing, because I know lots of people enjoy not just listening to my views on science fiction, on the books that I read, but also, you know, I guess people get to know me quite a bit through the things I talk about on the podcast, you know, my views on different issues and when I talk about the themes and the philosophy and different things in books like that. And also I know people enjoy keeping up to date with my travels and my performing and my shows and my videos and all these other things that I do. And of course I can just say what I'm doing, but I think I'd like to take a little bit of an opportunity to talk about why I do the stuff I do, why I do this podcast, and the way that not just doing this podcast, but also science fiction and reading in general has helped me grow as a person and has informed my own personal growth, my own personal life philosophy. I know it's a little bit weird to talk about this, but I thought, hey, I'm going to share. Maybe you'll find it interesting. Maybe I'll find it interesting because, you know, I don't have a lot of notes. I don't have a lot of format for this episode. I think I'll just, you know, just go through it. I do have some notes of stuff that I want to go through, but I thought, you know, I'd be a bit self-indulgent, but I guess that's what this podcast is. It's pure self-indulgence in a way, which I'll get into later in the podcast as well. So yeah, let's just get straight onto it. Generally, reading is good for personal growth. You learn stuff, and I like to know shit, I guess, and I think knowing interesting shit is very important. And it's not maybe that important, but not the amount of shit that I know, because I know a lot of stuff. I remember a huge amount of crap, you know, well, not crap, but like otherwise useless information. And people always ask me, oh, how do you know this? How do you know that? And it pretty much comes from reading. And a lot of it actually comes from reading science fiction. Not only that, a lot of my education at school came from, not from the lessons, but actually from reading. I used to get like detentions for months at a time. So every break time and every lunchtime, I would, you know, have to sit in the library. And so I just read books, you know, not every word in every book, but, you know, I just go through all of the books, turn each page, you know, something popped out of me, some passage or some picture or anything like this. I would, you know, read it, read for a chapter here, read for a chapter there, maybe go back to the book a few times. And I reckon, yeah, I probably learned more stuff just sitting in the library and reading at school than I did from the lessons. And what I didn't learn there, I pretty much learned from, you know, my father and my family, and because we used to go out and do, you know, outdoor pursuit stuff, you know, we got to these geography lessons and they're talking about how caves formed, and I'm like, yeah, well, I go caving like every weekend. I go down caves and I go canoeing and all that kind of stuff. I lived on an outdoor pursuit center, for goodness sake. That's the kind of stuff that I used to do. So reading was a big part of it. But for example, science fiction also helps out. Like 2 days ago I was in no, it was actually only yesterday. I was in Newfoundland, in St. John's in Newfoundland. And St. John's in Newfoundland, this has got this big harbour. And I was like, oh, wait a second. Oh, I know where I am. Because in the book, was it Fire in the Abyss? Is it Fire in the Abyss? I think, I can't remember the author's name now. But it tells the story. It's like a science fiction retelling of Humphrey Gilbert. He was, you know, an Elizabethan explorer. And he went across there and he landed on Newfoundland. Maybe he did land, I'm not quite sure. Anyway, he claimed Newfoundland and he claimed Labrador. And he claimed, like, he pretty much claimed Canada for the British crown. And I was thinking, oh, he's an historical figure. And then I was looking around and I came across the Humphrey Gilbert building. And I was like, oh, there it is. And of course, you know, you talk to people about this and they go, well, how do you know that Humphrey Gilbert came here but then died on the way back? I say, oh, I read a novel about him. And it was a science fiction novel. And again, you're never quite sure how much of these science fiction is actually science or real fact and how much is fictional, but it's a great source of knowledge. Another time this happened is like, you know, especially when authors do some good research, which, you know, the author of Fire in the Abyss obviously did. And also like Kim Stanley Robinson's Antarctica, I think I mentioned that in the review of that book that I, if I go back and listen to that one, is I think it's one of the earlier reviews that I did, and I said how much of a fantastic travel book it was, because even when I visited Antarctica, and I've done so twice now, they have all these different lectures and things like that, but the broad strokes on much of the lectures that I actually heard, I already knew a lot of that information from Kim Stanley Robinson, who'd been there. I mean, it wasn't a great novel, but it was a great travel book and things like that. And that's just one novel, or those are just two examples of novels that I've read, and then I've been to those places, and I've been informed by them, and I've already known about them, and I know what to look out for, and I know what to think, and I know what to do as well. But then you just think, I read about, what, 40 science fiction novels per year? I guess it works out. I've done, I think the episode 100, after 2.5 years, I guess it works out, it was 40 science fiction novels per year. And I've just got masses and masses and masses of useless shit in my head. And the amount that's in my head, I think, is quite impressive. But, of course, maybe this useless shit won't always be useless, because sometimes, you know, I turned up, and also in Newfoundland, there's the what's called Signal Hill, and they go, oh, yeah, this is where Marconi did the first transatlantic radio broadcast. And I was like, oh, that's great. Well, I already know all about that, but now I'm here. And I guess maybe I could have learned about it once I got there rather than before I got there, but I think actually knowing all about it before I get to this historic site that it was about, you know, they didn't think that the radio broadcast would work, because, you know, the Earth is round, and they thought, well, if we just put radio broadcast here, it'll just go straight into space. And then they're like, no, it won't, it'll bounce off the ionosphere. Actually, they didn't know that, but that's what Marconi discovered. And then they went, oh, ionosphere, that bounces radio waves, fancy that. And that's why, you know, suddenly this long-term radio communicator. And I'm not saying this to show off that I know this kind of stuff, but it's the kind of thing that you pick up on just by reading science fiction. You know, the history of technology, the history of science, it's all in there. You know, you just read it over and over again, especially, you know, stuff about astronomy and computers and all this stuff. So I don't think this stuff is useless, because one day it'll come in handy of something that, you know, it'll come in handy just when I visit. I'll just be able to explain it to someone. I won't be confused if with different stuff, and it'll help in a trivia quiz or pub quiz or something like that. However, I'm going to get a little bit more into a specific science fiction scenario, which I think about a lot. One second, I'll just have a quick drink here. And I think which will sort of inform, inform you about how I have been influenced by science fiction into actually being the person I have. Now, I once tried to explain this to someone. I think it was Jesse from the science fiction fantasy audio podcast. We chat quite a bit, and I was trying to explain this to him, and he kept on trying to take it in tangents, because that's what our conversations are, just many, many long tangents in a row. And I was like, no, I still haven't got to the point of what I'm trying to say. So I know this will probably take a few minutes to explain. I'll go through it in like steps, maybe 4 or 5 steps or something like that. So stick with it, because it's a little bit complex, but that's why I'm sort of taking a whole podcast just to talk about it on its own. But I think it is quite important, and like I say, it is the thing that has informed me in my life. Okay, so step one, I know lots of useless shit. Good start, okay? Okay, how about this? Step two, or let's just say step one, oh, that's just the setup. So step one can be suddenly get transported back in time, and it only happens once, and it only happens to me. I just go back in time, and then I'm stuck there. Or if I'll stick with the time travel, but it could be that I'm transported into an alternative dimension, like, say, I'm trying to think of a science fiction-y kind of thing. Oh, look, just say, like, Narnia. So you get the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, you go there, and suddenly in a medieval environment. Or maybe I get put into cold sleep, and I wake up thousands of years after the apocalypse and blah, blah, blah. Okay, so the big question is, like, what do you do? And I always think it really depends on how far you go back, because you read this about this in different time travel and things like that. You can go back to the Stone Age, and you can become a king or a god, and you don't really need to know too much. All you need to know is like basic stuff, like that like metal exists, and you can sort of work it out. Or you know that what the moon is, and you know that the Earth isn't flat, it's actually round, you know, the basic stuff. An example of a book that I reviewed like that kind of thing is Encounter with Tiber by Buzz Aldrin and John Barnes, and they go back in time. Well, they don't go back in time, but there's something that happens when aliens turn up on Earth in our distant past, and of course they're all sort of like gods straight away. But of course, that's only when you go really far back. But if you go like into antiquity, you've got to be more clever. You've got to know as much as people like Socrates or Plato or Pythagoras or something like. You need to know their basics before you can become the god or the great philosopher of the time and shape history and advance history and go even further. And then, of course, once you get up into the Middle Ages, you've got to like invent something which hasn't been invented yet, but you need to know how to invent it. So if someone said, oh, yeah, there's this thing called movable type printing press. That would be a really handy thing to get the... or maybe you want to teach the Romans how to invent that rather than it being, you know, being left until the Germans in the 12th century or whenever it was, or before then. I'm not even entirely sure when all these different things happen. But you've got to, okay, how does that work? And then, of course, a bit later on, you get the Renaissance. I could become a mad inventor there because, you know, people have already started working out actually how metal works and different things, and you can just bring in the general engineering knowledge of the time and start applying science like they started doing in the Enlightenment and also in the... In the Industrial Revolution, they started mixing engineering and science for the first time. Beforehand, they were very separate, and then they started mixing. So all the way through, up until like the early 20th century, I could be like the big inventor, the revolutionary guy who was probably going to be accused of witchcraft. But okay, skipping over that. But the idea is that everything that I want to learn about, not just from science fiction books, but in general, I like to read up on it as much as I possibly can so I can know it from a basis of first principles. I might not know exactly how it's done, but, you know, I could think about what the challenges are and work around a bit. So I reckon that if I need to invent it, I can invent it. Because... maybe I wouldn't have to do all the work myself. You know, I could be like, I could some set like a good metal worker on to invent something like, you know, the Yankee Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court or something like that. Doesn't he have a gun, but then he has to get someone to make a bullet for it? I can't remember exactly. It's been a long, long time since I've read that. But you could sort of set some talented metal worker onto it. But the idea is that you've got to know the principles behind it. And actually, this is something I came up with years and years old, something I've been thinking about for many, many years. But there's the guy who writes the... I think it's Ryan North who writes the Dinosaurs comic, or Dinosaur comics. So just search for Dinosaur comics, and it's a very, very funny comic. I don't really have time to read it every day now. I used to for a long time. But he wrote up this thing called the Time Travel Poster. And the idea, and it's a t-shirt as well, the idea is that you get a poster and you stick it up in your time machine, so no matter where you go back to, you can know the formulas, you can know the ideas, you can know the principles, and you can take the credit and invent it. And all the way through it's going, take the credit. Yeah, you can take the credit on this one, you can take the credit on that one. And it's quite interesting. Now, so that's what you can get to up until, like I said, now around about the 20th century. Now it starts getting a bit more tricky, because then people start winning Nobel Prizes for things that I don't really understand, you know, because I could go back in time, like to the early 20th century, I could probably win a few Nobel Prizes just from the stuff that I know now, things that you know now. You could, you know, it would be good, you know, but a lot of it, you sort of really got to show your workings with science, and I probably wouldn't be able to show my workings. I could explain relatively to someone, but then they could say, yeah, but actually, how does this tie in with Maxwell's equations of light and or the propagation of light through that kind of thing? And I'd be like, I know it does, but then they would say, so what are the Maxwell's equations? And I'd be like, wait a second, I'd need, you know, and there's no way that I could just remember all of that. You know, like I say, if the knowledge was about at the time, I could probably say, actually, what you need to do, you need to combine that equation and that equation, and guess what, if you put them together, the speed of light pops out, and how awesome is that? And they'd go, oh yeah, it does, and they'd give me a Nobel Prize for that, but I'd have to leave other people to do the work, and of course, that's not going to be good. And of course, like I say, maybe I could invent things, like I could say, okay, what we need is a computer with a graphical user interface, and everyone would go, yeah, what's that? And I'd say, well, what we need, well, invent this thing like a mouse, and you move it around on a desk and it points to different points on the screen. And they'll be going, oh, that's great, how do we do that? And I'll be like, computer programming. So in other words, it gets to the point like where you get mobile phones and fax machines and all these other things. They used to be part of science fiction, and you know, they weren't invented until an engineer came along, or someone actually came along and put them together for the first time. That's the person who invented it. I mean, you can say that, you know, other people invented computers, but it wasn't until like computers actually became, you know, usable, where you could actually say they were really invented, you know. And maybe the computers is a bad example, but like many people invented the flying car, but there's actually only one or two companies now who are building flying cars or trying to build flying cars. So they're the ones who are actually the inventors and the people taking credit. So like I'm saying, that's the thing with science and this kind of stuff. You've got to sort of prove it. Oh, I made a note here about the structure of DNA. If someone said, what's the structure of DNA? And I could be like, oh yeah, it's a double helix. And they'll be like, yeah, you sure? And I'd be like, yeah, I can prove it by, I think you need some kind of refracting microscope. You need to sort of use crystals and so. And this is just like a general kind of thing that I know about the history of them discovering the structure of the double helix nature of DNA. And I know the story of it, but again, I just know the words that they were using to describe the story and not their way. Anyway, that's the note that I put rather than computers here. So what it comes down to in the end is the ideas behind them, the actual intellectual property. Let's call this step three. Okay, so imagine this. I arrive in the 1960s and I have a 50-year head start on popular culture. So I can write all the songs that have been written by all the big groups. You know, I know quite a few Beatles songs. You know, I know a lot of the back catalogue of all of these different big groups, you know. And if it came down to it, I could say, okay, I'm going to become a songwriter because everyone can sing along and I can write down the melodies and I know enough about music to be able to do this. I could write down the melodies and I go, actually, what you need to do with this guitar, we're gonna make it distorted, you know, and I could probably work out how to make a guitar distorted and work out how to do that kind of stuff or use the technology of the time to, like, and I'd always be one step ahead of all the other musical people in the songwriting and song production and things like that. I mean, it's what I did at university. It's something I've studied, so I know that I could do this. Now, the big problem with this is that it really isn't about the songwriting. Just taking another drink there. So, and it really, like, say if I write movie scripts as well or write stories, that's another big thing. It really isn't about how good the movie script is that you've written or even about how good the song is that you've written or even about the sound of the song, because there's lots of people doing different sounds all the different times, but only some of them catch on at any time, and if it's too out there, you can't do it. And it's the same with the lyrics as well. Yeah, there's lots of lyricists out there, but not all of them are working all the time and not all of them are being producing. It's not, it's not about doing good work. It's not about writing a catchy song. It's not even about writing a good song, a great song. It's about being in the right place at the right time. It's about meeting the right people and forming the band, and even then you only can record a few albums a year and the audience has to keep up with you. So it doesn't matter how great a band is, like say the Beatles or someone like that, they could only progress their music at a certain rate. You know, they had an evolution of their sound and their songwriting over time. And if they'd have put out like some of their later albums or some of their mid-range albums at the very beginning, they would have never been as big as they are. And it doesn't matter how much of a genius these songs are, but they wouldn't have been able to keep going with it, you know, because people have just been like, oh, that was too weird. You know, was that, you know, difficult second album. But they were the right people in the right place with the songs that they'd written. They were there, and that's what it done. You know, and it doesn't matter how good, well, I say it doesn't matter how good you are at writing songs, but there are people like the Bee Gees who invented disco music, and they also wrote the all-time best-selling country music single as well. Not that they performed it, but they wrote it. But again, their success of all the musical success didn't really even come from their songwriting or their production and stuff like that. The thing that really got them noticed in the first place, because they had actually had some, you know, they were a group, they were a band, and I think they recorded a few albums or at least a few records at the time, and they've been gigging for a few years, and then suddenly they started singing really high voices, and that's the thing that brought them out. Now, if I went back to that time, I'd be like, oh, okay, I'd write the Bee Gees songs, but then I'd sing in a really high voice as well, but then I wouldn't have the right facial hair and I wouldn't have the brothers to be able to do that, because I'd just be me by myself. So, like I say, the Bee Gees, the songwriting that they do is very good and it helps, but it's a lot more than that. It's even down to the facial hair and the exact tone of voice that they have and the harmonies that they can have and the way that they work together as a group, and you can't get that by going back in time yourself. So, step four, and this is a big key, is how to apply all of this to my own life. And I think I've gone on like 15 minutes about this already, but this is a big key. This is a big step. Time travel doesn't exist. Me going into a different dimension probably isn't going to happen. Me going back in time or being transported to another culture on a different planet and suddenly me becoming the wizard. Like I say, the wizard is an easier step, knowing the scientific principles and stuff like that. But that might not be where I go. Maybe I'll only go back to the 60s or the 70s or the 80s or maybe 5 years ago. And if I go back 5 years ago, maybe I only know 5 years worth of songs to rip off and try and be an artist. But again, it's not about this. It's not about the songwriting. So I'm thinking, well, maybe just going back in time, maybe the best thing to do is maybe just bet on the horses. But then, you know, with, you know, butterflies flapping wings, as or maybe you flapping your wings and it changes, stuff like that. So you're never going to quite sure how much you can bet on these things and play the lottery and just get money. And then is it just about the money? Because if you're going back in time anyway, maybe that's not, money isn't the important thing. Anyway, really weird thing to look at it, was you just go, well, maybe going back in time isn't that great, and maybe going back you won't become famous and you won't become rich, because if it's so much about the situation that you're in, you going back in time, like to recent history, and trying to become famous with intellectual property rather than scientific knowledge or inventions, it's probably not going to help you that much just coming from the future. You'll know where the trends are going, but how likely is it that you stepping in, just by stepping in and changing one trend, that means all trends after that would have changed as well. So it doesn't matter how many songs you know from the future, you'd have changed anyway, you'd have changed history anyway. So it's really strange. So you think, well, I might as well just give up. Or the other way to look at it, and this is, I guess, step four, is this is really where I apply it to my own life, is that I live my life as though I'm someone from the future who has been sent back in time. And this is maybe sounds a little bit weird, but just let me say that again. This is how I live my life. I come back, I haven't come back in time, but I do have a big store of intellectual property that may or may not be successful. If I get myself into the right situation, and that intellectual property doesn't come from the future, it comes from my own head, it comes from my own creativity. And because it just so happens that I'm not from the future and I'm from now, but I still have this big store of intellectual property, that doesn't make my intellectual property worse than the hypothetical intellectual property from the future, which is guaranteed to be successful, because that isn't guaranteed to be successful in this timeline where time travel doesn't exist and people aren't coming back with guaranteed ideas, because there are no guaranteed ideas. Because what it comes down to is that I'm not a better songwriter than everyone out there, but I know I'm a better songwriter than many people who have become successful songwriters and famous musicians, except they're not doing the songwriting, or the reason they've become famous isn't because they're a songwriter. Maybe it's just a cultural thing, or it's a look thing, or they've taken part in a competition, stuff like that. In other words, they have done things that, I mean, they're just a bad writer, but they've done, maybe not bad writer, that's what I'd better say, they're just another musician who happens to have been lucky at what they do, or maybe not lucky, they're just, like I say, right place, right time, and stuff like that. So that's what I do with all of my things that I do. I do it with my music. I know that I'm a good musician. I'm not a great musician, but, you know, I'm pretty good. And I try and always get myself to the position, not that I'm a good enough musician with knowledge of the future or knowledge now and going back into the past to become successful. I want to make sure that I'm as good a songwriter and as good a musician, or as good as a music producer, or these other things that I do with music, to be good enough to stand up to the people who are writing songs and recording songs today. And I don't have to be as good as the best of them on their best, but I could probably, at my best, I could probably be as good as some of the best songwriters on their average days. I mean, I know this sounds arrogant, but this is what I'm aiming for with my own music, and also with my writing and with my photography. You know, so many people say to me now, they're like, oh wow, what camera have you got? You must have a really great camera. And it's not that I've got a great camera, but I take that people think that I have a good camera as a compliment, because I don't have a great camera. I've actually got the most basic, like, Canon DSLR that you can get, and I have some, you know, I have one or two cheap lenses, but I know how to use it, and it's that kind of thing. Same with my blogging and my podcasting. I know that I'm not the best podcaster out there, but I know on my good days I'm as good as anyone. I can be just as entertaining as any podcaster or any radio presenter out there on my good days. Or put it this way, on my good days I can be as good as the best on the average days are. I know it's a really strange thing to be aiming for, but I'm not aiming to be the best blogger or podcaster or photographer or writer or musician. I'm wanting to be able to stand up to, or stand shoulder to shoulder with the people who are making money in these areas, or with the people who are successful in these areas, because I know that they're not successful because they're better than me or because they're better than other people. They're more successful because they were in the right place at the right time. Some of them spectacularly in the right place at the right time. Others, they worked very hard to be in the right time, right place at the right time. But I don't do that, but I make sure I'm talented enough to be in the right place at the right time, and I have enough belief in my own ideas and my own intellectual property ideas and my own story ideas and my own music ideas and my own photography capabilities and all these other capabilities, that, and I have to have this, well, let me put it this way, I have to have the same belief in these ideas as I do as if they're somebody else's ideas that I've brought back from the future, and now I'm recreating them step by step, piece by piece, in software on my laptop. Okay. And that's the thing. I need to know there's no difference in the quality of my best work and the people, the work of those people who are successful in their fields. Like I say, not the best work of the best people in the fields, but the average work of the best people in the fields. Or, to put it this way, the best work of the average people in their fields. I think that's the way that I want to work harder until it is. Now, because like I say, traveling back in time, no guarantee of success. Let me just get to the next note that I have here. Yeah, because like I say, let's get to this. Success doesn't come with the knowledge, and it doesn't even come with even being the right place at the right time. It also comes with the hard work to be at the right place at the right time, and hard work and talent and things like that. And one day, with some of these things, I might be that person. But I can't wait for it to come along and then be ready for it. I have to be ready for it now, so when it does come as long, I've already put in as much hard work as the people who are average or representative of their fields or even the best of their fields. I'd have had to have already put in that much work, so when the right place and the right time does come along, I can just step in and be like, ta-da, here I am. You know, so someone says, you know, someone sees me playing the guitar and singing and or something like that, and they say, hey, check it out. Do you have like an album's worth of material? Do you have like a whole song? Do you have songs and could you produce an album? I'd be like, yeah, I can do that. Why are you going to give me a gig or a record contract or something like that? And they'd say, yeah, we need a musician tomorrow and they have to have 20 songs and 2 hours worth of material or something like that. And they've got to do that with just you and a guitar, or you and a piano. Can you do it? And I'd be like, you know what? I can do that. And that's the kind of thing that it would be, you know, it'd be great if someone said, hey, actually, look, someone's fallen ill and we need a photographer and you've got to go. I know it's a really difficult gig, but you've got to go to Africa and we're going to go up and we're going to take photos of gorillas. Can you do this? And I'd be like, yes, I can, because I have been practicing taking photographs of wildlife and people and all these different things for the last few years. And I know that if you give me a project like this, I could probably deliver on it. You know, I couldn't guarantee success, but I could guarantee that I'm ready for success and things like that. And this is a thing that people always ask me, you know, when I actually just bring it back to music again, is people say, they see me play. I say, I love playing the guitar. They see me playing the guitar and say, what songs can you do? Or what songs do you know? And I'm like, I know my songs. I write songs and I play my own songs. And then they say, well, can you play this by this artist? And I was like, maybe. I don't know. I don't play anybody else's songs. It's like as a juggler, I don't juggle other people's tricks. Well, I do sometimes, but put it this way. I don't perform other people's routines. And when I perform comedy on stage, I don't perform other people's comedy. I come up with my own things as well. And when as a writer, I don't write other people's stories or write other people's characters. I come up with my own. So as a musician, that's what I do. You know, I try and instead of playing other people's music, I spend time trying to make better versions of my own songs or by writing songs and learning how to play them or just coming up with new things as well like that. And like I say, all of these different things, it's about being ready when that right time comes along and that right place comes along. It's about being ready at a professional level or having my capabilities up at that professional level to be able to just step in and do it. And because, you know, I don't put myself out there as much as other people with these things. Like, I don't try and become a professional photographer because I don't have to because I've got another job. And I don't try and become a professional author because at the moment I don't really feel like I have to because I've got another job. And all these other things that I enjoy doing, like music and things, I don't have to put myself out there to try and put myself in the right place at the right time to become successful because I'm already successful at what I do. And that is, I'm a professional juggler. If this is your first episode of this podcast, maybe you're thinking, well, what's this guy? He's a bit big-headed and stuff like that. But the point is that this works because, let me put it this way, it worked for me. I was in the right place at the right time. I was working, you know, I worked for a TV station for a long time, but I was getting more into juggling. Actually, I wrote a post about it back in April. It's 10 years since I decided not that I wanted to be a professional juggler, but that I wanted to be as good as the best of the jugglers out there not the best of the best, but what I'm saying is that I went along to a large juggling convention and I saw people breaking world records at juggling. And also I saw people performing in this massive show. There's like 1,000 people in the audience and it was the best show that I'd ever seen. And it was and still to this day, it's on people's top, it's like people's top shows that I've ever seen at any juggling convention. And it was like my first big juggling convention. And there was these people performing there. And I was like, this is actually what I want to do. I didn't know I wanted to be a professional juggler back then, but I knew that I wanted to break world records of my own. And also I wanted to be performing on the biggest stages at the biggest juggling conventions. I wanted to be the headline act at a like a a national juggling convention or even an international juggling convention, that's what I would want to be. Like, I know it's a weird thing to say, but like in the music world, that would be akin to, say, headlining a big music festival or being on the main stage at Glastonbury. Maybe not headlining Glastonbury, because that is really the biggest bands of the year do that, or the biggest bands of the generation do that kind of thing. But generally, you want to be like on the main stage at Glastonbury, not on some side stage. And it took me years, but in the end, I got there and I started performing at these much larger juggling conventions. And because I was aiming to be as good, not as good as the best juggler, but as good as the standard of jugglers who were actually making as a living, one day I quit my job and I had another job lined up working for another television company. But there was this break in between. And after a few weeks of not working for a living and just being a juggler, I was actually like, this is might be the best thing that's ever happened to me. Because I was sort of like half fired from my job and half quit. It was a bit of a weird situation. But I was like, this is pretty good, actually. And I went through, actually, at the same time, I was going through a bit of a turmoil in my life, you know, bad breakup with a girlfriend and all this different kind of stuff. But I worked out that actually what I didn't want to do is go back and have a proper job. But I thought what I could do now is actually start working as a juggler. And it was quite a few years later that I, you know, was making the same amount of money as my real job. But again, that came through with a breakthrough because someone said, someone said to me, hey, I can recommend you to my agent. So if you want to work on cruise ships, I'll recommend you to my agent. And he says, do you have a 50-minute show? Do you have like 50 minutes worth of material to perform in a show? And I turned to my girlfriend at the time, Pola, who, you know, I was performing with then. And we looked at each other and went, yeah, we could do that. And it was actually Pola's idea. She was like, yeah, let's try it. Let's go for, you know, that. So what I did, I was booked at a theatre festival in Israel. And I did, like, actually over the course of that week, I did three 50-minute shows. Two of those shows were different. So I actually had two 50-minute shows worth of material, plus more material on top of that, because I was also hosting shows at this festival too. And I realised it is. So I sent off this promo, and the agent got back to me and was like, yeah, I want you to perform on the Queen Mary 2. And I was like, isn't that like the biggest cruise ship in the world at the moment? And he's like, yeah, and you're going to be doing a headlining performance one night. So that was actually how it happens, that I did have the skills that when I quit my last real job, I decided not to take a new job because I knew my skills were up to the level of these people. And again, this is all informed by the idea of, like, you can't rely on just being good, or you can't rely on even, well, it's a bit strange, you can't even rely on being in the right time at the right place. And it's a bit strange to take this all the way back to this, is that, you know, someone saying, are you ready? Yes, I can do it. Are you ready now? Yes, I can do it. In the same way that you've got to be ready with your skill when you go back in time to become a successful time traveler, or to be going into a different place, and all these different other things, you know. And I'm talking about creative areas here, because I am a creative kind of person. I'm an artistic kind of person, and I want to talk, you know, I do intellectual property. That's what I do. That's what I create. That's my, you know, my real passion is to create things. It's not even to be artistic. It's just to be creative, is to put out material. It's to put to be a net exporter of intellectual property, or, you know, of entertainment or consumable entertainment. I want to, you know, I want to be an exporter of that rather than just an importer of that into my own life, and things like that. Now, as I was saying, sort of drifted away from the topic of science fiction here, but it was the clarifying moment in all of this when it was actually probably around about five years ago, I'd say about 2005, after after a few years of not having a real job and just working as a juggler and also, you know, reading science fiction, that is when I came to this realization of actually, it's not just, you know, this whole thing where I was tying it back into science fiction. It was when I suddenly thought about this, that just going back in time and knowing stuff isn't a guarantee of success. It's a lot more than that. It's about being in the right place at the right time. But then again, being in the right place at the right time is no good if you're not the right person in the right place at the right time. So then it's becoming the right person for your time travel adventure. To be ready for your time travel adventure is good. But of course, time travel doesn't work. So in the end, that time travel wouldn't work gives me confidence in my own endeavors. And that's what it comes down to. So that's where I get all my self-confidence in all of the different kind of things, is that I honestly believe that my ideas that I have now are just as good as time travelers from the future's ideas would be good for now. Like I say, my ideas might not be good for 10 years ago or 2 years ago or even for 2 months ago, but for now, my ideas are just as good as time travelers from the future's would be good, maybe on their second idea that they present. I'm not sure. Maybe, hopefully you understand this. If you're not getting any of this, if you think I've just done a really bad job, I've just talked for like half an hour about this, and hopefully you've got to the point of this first part. I guess I could go into some other things, but I think I might skip it, save it for some other episode, and I'll get a little bit more back onto this podcast itself. One second, quick drink again. So, yeah, a bit more about this, the Science Fiction Book Review podcast, not so much about this generic life philosophy of creativity that I have here. 2.5 years ago, well, actually, it was August in, I guess, 2000. And, when did I start this podcast? It would have been early. I did all 2008, all the 2009. So, yeah, it would have been August in 2007. And I was reading some books and I thought, well, what would be good? I'd like to do a podcast about science fiction books. Because at the time, there wasn't, you know, there was like the Starship Sofa. They were talking, they would do these episodes. It's not the same Starship Sofa as it is now. They would talk, Kieran and Tony would talk about a specific writer and they would go through like a whole writer. And other people, another podcast were talking about science fiction in general, but it was a lot about television, a lot about comics, a lot about superheroes and all this different stuff, which I'm just not interested in the slightest. Well, tiny bit interested. But what I really enjoyed was discussing or the talk about the actual books themselves. And so I decided to set up my own little book review podcast. And I'd already had podcasting experience. You know, I had... I had my own juggling podcast, and I liked it and I enjoyed it. I wanted to talk about novels. I thought I'd have to do it by myself because it's really difficult to get two people reading the same novel at the same time on a regular basis. Anyway, it does work. And there was a few books. Let me just explain this. There's a few books that really inspired me. One of them, a few of them were good books that I read. I think one of them was by, was it C.J. Cherry? I think it was Down Below Station, a book that I'd read before. And I read it and I enjoyed it so much. I was wanting to tell people. And I thought, I don't just want to write a book review for Amazon.com or something like that because they just disappear. And I want to have like a deeper discussion, something that you can't really do just with the, text. It's really difficult to really get into like the intricacies and really talk about it in depth or to be as free with it as well and to be, you know, and to be as personable in text as it is just for talking as well. So I decided that I'd do this. Oh, and the other book was a bad book, one that was I'd say it's probably worse than bad. It was terrible. It was really, really bad, but in really good in some ways, but really, really bad in other ways. It was called The Swarm, and I can't remember the guy's name. It's a German author, and it was a translation of a German like techno thriller, science fiction techno thriller book, which was like the most successful book in Germany that year. And my ex-girlfriend's mother bought it for me because she knew that I liked science fiction. I was like, oh, great. So I read it, and it was terrible. And I had so many strong opinions about it, and I wanted to share them all because it was like some of the worst info dumping and worst expository dialogue and all this kind of stuff. It was like, it was so many of the worst. It was like the example of the worst of so many things. I was like, I have to share this with the world. Actually, I never did get to review that one. Maybe I'll actually go back and just not read it again. I'll just do the review or maybe find my notes that I had or maybe just put out like the test reviews that I reviewed back then as well. So I did record a few tests, and then there was the Books You Should Read podcast, which was from the Simply Syndicated Network, which I don't listen to anymore or any of their podcasts then, but back then they were putting out this new podcast, and it was the idea was that you had to record, it was like a listener-submitted one, so that you record a review of a book, and they would put it out. And when they first announced this, I was like, oh, this is what I want to do anyway, so I'll do this. So I did an Ender's Game review, and they liked it so much that they put it out as their first episode. And that gave me a big confidence boost that I'd got the idea right, or I got the format right. So I started so I started my own podcast. Actually, the Ender's Game review that I recorded for there, that podcast I included in this feed as well, actually, so you could check that out. So I started New Year, the first book that I read in 2008, I did a review of, and I saved up the reviews for a few weeks, and then I uploaded them and with a new first episode, you know, and did it like that. I recorded a few before I started releasing them, and I put together the website and stuff like that. And really what I was wanting wasn't just me talking and reviewing, it was actually the book recommendations and the discussions and just general feedback from people, and the emails started coming in, and I didn't do any promotion or not much promotion at all. And it's really strange, all these different things that have you know, the different ways that people have found the podcast. You know, some of them was when I was a guest on other podcasts, and some of them were, you know, here and there, and some was from Wikipedia. I put a link to most of the shows on Wikipedia, on the book page of Wikipedia and things like that, so it's interesting how people got through. But I didn't do a lot of promotion, and yeah, it's been great. The general drift of the emails is that, you know, they enjoy my, you know, enjoy my honesty and things, which is really great. I know, I guess you're listening, so I guess you know why you like this. But there's always these general thanks emails, and they go, oh yeah, I've listened to 30 episodes in the last 2 days, and I've got, you know, 50 more episodes to go, and I'll, and then they email me back about a week later, and they're like, yeah, I finished all the episodes, and I'm like, wow, you know, that's a lot. I don't listen back to my podcasts after I've recorded them, so it's a bit strange. But the best thing is that I get more and more out of reading than I used to do as well. Now that I'm, and now that I know that I'm going to have to talk about a book for a while, I know that I get more out of it. I get more enjoyment out of reading it, knowing that I'm going to do a review. But the good thing is that I don't actually have to think about it as I'm reading the book. I just read it and then enjoy it. And then by analyzing it, I get this extra round of enjoyment. I get to relive the book again in review form, in hindsight again as I go back through it. So it hasn't got in the way of me enjoying books at all. And you could probably tell that by the amount of like 3.5, 4, and 4.5 star ratings that I give to so many of these books, that I still really enjoy fiction now just as much as I did when I started reading it. And especially because loads of people are recommending really good books to me. So keep those recommendations coming in. It's almost even yesterday, I just got an email about it yesterday, about they've bought me an ebook on fictionwise.com. So I'm going to have to, you know, I'm going to sign up for Fictionwise, and I can read in it and put that on my iPhone. And so the next trip that I do, I'm going to read a book that someone's bought me on Fictionwise, which I'm really looking forward to, because it's a book that I was interested in, but I didn't realize, I didn't think I'd be able to get hold of it very easily. But, you know, the person, I think it's the person who recommended it to me, then bought it for me. And I think this is really, really good. Two other things, I guess, is that it's a big sort of boost personally, just to be able to have practice talking. Practice talking. I'm just standing up here. I mean, this is what I do for a living. I'm a professional entertainer. I get up on stage and do hour-long shows on stage, and it's just me on stage, and I've got to fill time. Of course, a lot of that time is filled with me juggling, but a lot of the time is just filled with me talking. So I need to know that I can just have a microphone or be just be on stage and talk, and just generally be able to talk and string a sentence together and not and too much. Although I don't really mind ummings and ers, because I think it's, you know, it's natural. It's a natural part of conversation, and I want to keep my podcast conversational. But like, I'm just sitting here, I have a few notes in front of me, and generally I have, like, whenever I'm doing a book review, I have generally between like 10, 15, maybe 20 like 3-word sentences or maybe 5-word sentences of just stuff that I know that I need to touch on. And just with the outline, I can often do 45, 50 minutes of talking about a book. And, you know, that's a skill. I mean, that's something, it's another one of these skills, like, you know, music and like all these other things that I was talking about beforehand, that I need to know that I'm good enough that if anyone says, look, have you ever read this book? Yes. Can you talk about it on, say, this radio show? Can you be a book reviewer on this TV show or something? Because this is never going to happen. But I like to think that I have that skill, and it really does cross over into other areas of my life, you know, mainly that I'm a professional performer and things like that. The final thing, which is a big impact of my podcast, is on the writing side. You know, it did get to the point where I've often tried writing, and I've written quite a few short stories, or especially halves of short stories, and I've written many, many first chapters of many, many novels. But then it got to a point where it really did come to, I actually put this on my on my website, is that I'm saying this is the worst book I've ever read and I could do better. And I was saying, well, I wasn't actually saying that, but that's the kind of thing that I was implying by when I'm sort of ripping into an artist. And I think that's really not fair. I need to put up or shut up in this way. You know, I need to put out my own work there, and then I can feel strong in criticizing others. Not saying that I'm a better writer than those others, but it's just, I need to give it a go. I need to know what people go through when they're writing a novel and finishing a novel. And then when they put it out there, getting, you know, stuff back from readers as well, you know, and so that's what I did. So NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month, November 2008, I went for it, and I joined up with some other people, not actually any of the listeners, but of this podcast, but on a forum that I chatted on online there, and there was a few of us who weren't for it, and two of us completed it. And the good thing is, I put reading on hold as well, because I was concentrating so much on finishing this novel, on finishing this book. It's a short book, but the great thing is that then, because of this podcast, I had people who were actually willing to read it. I said, you know, I put out a call saying, if you want to read my novel, test it out, see what you like, if it's worth, you know, continuing, if it's worth editing and working on, tell me. And there was plenty of people who did, and a few of them emailed back invaluable help. And then I went through another round of feedback, and, you know, went after another edit, another round of feedback, and then in June 2009 I released the novel, and the responses has been awesome. You know, again, without my podcast, I would probably maybe have got one or two people to ever read my novel. Maybe a few more, I'm not sure. I'm not even sure how more people would have read my novel. But because I put free ebooks up online, and because of the listeners to this podcast have sort of slightly interested in my work and things like that, it's actually been really, it's been worth it. Because it's been worth it, because then all those different emails that come in, it made me want to write another one, and so I have, and then it made me want to write another one, and so I have, and now I'm working. I've released three novels. That I wouldn't say them full novels. You know, they're like novels/novellas. I classed two of them as novels because even though they're quite short, I think they've got the substance and the plot and of a novel, if maybe not the length, because I am quite a brisk writer. But the novel that I'm writing at the moment, I'm really trying to write a longer story with more description and more dialogue and more character. In a way, so it actually fleshing out, and that's why I've decided to write a fantasy novel, because I think that is more suited to like trying to write longer, or maybe not trying to write longer, but it suits a sort of slightly extended format. And now I'm writing like scenes, like which are maybe 5,000 words long, or sections of the book which are 5,000, maybe 7,000 words long, and that would be like a whole quarter of a book, or maybe not quarter of a book, but a whole big chunk of a previous novel. But now it's just the setup into one plot point of the. I mean, more going on than that too, but you know, there's lots of character stuff and, you know, introduction stuff and you know, description and world building and things like that, but I can retake my time on it, and it's great that I have I'm able to do that. And just to tie it back to the first half of this podcast where I was talking about why I do this and what I do and being you know, trying to be good at it, there's yeah, I say I've got maybe 100 emails or something about from people who've read the novels. Hopefully more people have read that. And it is, I know it is a self-selecting group, because it's only the people who like me will read the novel, and it's only the people who like the novel or even finish the novel will email me to tell me about it. But what I hear over and over is that it's better than many of the books that I've paid for, or it's better than many of the books that I've read which have been published, or it's better than many of the books even by some good authors. You know, my book is better. Now, again, I'm not... I don't think I'm a better writer than the best writers out there, but I know I'm probably as good a writer as a standard published science fiction author on a good day, or me on a good day is the same as them on a good day, or maybe my writing on a good day is as good as some of the top science fiction authors on their bad days or days off, or... you know, I hope you understand what I'm saying here as well, but this was my aim when I started writing fiction, and I'm really pleased that, without the listeners of this podcast, and without this podcast, of course, and without the responses and the emails and all the encouragement I get from the listeners, which is great, you know, I get like 3 or 4 emails, well, let me put it this way, I'd say maybe 10, 15 emails a week. I get from listeners to this podcast, you know, some of them are people who read my book, others are people just listening to the podcast for the first time, lots of them are recommending books, but it's great. That kind of stuff really gives me a huge boost of not just my confidence in the podcast, but also as an author myself. And I'm not planning on becoming a published author. I don't think I need to do that. I get as much satisfaction from just people discovering my podcast or discovering my books through my podcast and reading and enjoying them as I would do if I was getting paid for it, because I don't need to get paid for it. Like I say, I've got another job. That's not what I'm interested in here. I mean, it'd be nice to get paid for it if someone does want to give me that kind of thing. But also, just one final thing is that I think that my science fiction novels really do complement this Science Fiction Book Review podcast, because I do think, and I'm not just tooting my own horn here, I do think that the fiction that I've written is my clearest statement on science fiction. Like, for example, I often talk about, you know, in my reviews, what I think is good about science fiction or bad about science fiction. In the negative reviews, I talk about what I dislike about other people's attempts at science fiction and why I think it's bad and why it's not and why it's good. Now, I know that there's stuff that I've written in my books because, you know, I'm still learning. I know there's stuff that I would go back and change now, or that I don't think is fantastic. I don't think it's great, and it would go on one of those lists of things that I don't like about science fiction, or that I I don't think is good about writing. However, all of the things that I do think is good about science fiction, I try to include in my novels, and I think I do pretty good with it. I think I make it pretty clear with my novels what I think science you can do with science fiction, which you may not be able to do otherwise, or it would be more difficult to do it otherwise. So, yeah, I think check out my own, if you're interested more in where I'm coming from with my reviews, check out my novels. And I'm not just doing that to pimp them, because like I say, it doesn't really matter if you buy my book or not, because you can't buy my book because I'm giving it away for free anyway. So don't worry about it. It's just like, if you want to get more of a glimpse into who I am or what I am, or the person behind these reviews and the person that read my novels, and you'll, because to me, they're very highly personal things, just as this podcast is a very personal endeavor. So I've gone on almost 50 minutes now about me, and which again, thanks a lot for letting me be this self-indulgent for this one episode. I do have another book that I finished reading, Lucifer's Hammer, and I finished it a few days ago, but I haven't had chance to do this because I've been traveling a lot. I flew back from Newfoundland. I started yesterday from Newfoundland, got to Heathrow today. I've flown back. I'm in Berlin. I'm at home for about 18 hours, and then tomorrow morning I fly back to Heathrow and then down to Cape Town to join another ship. So my life is all a bit upside down at the moment. It's all over the place. I don't have a chance to do another podcast now, but I'll get to it hopefully in the next few days and carry on with the normal programming will resume in the next episode. But I really do hope you enjoyed this, and if you've got anything that you want to talk to me about, or if this is means anything to you, or maybe I've changed your mind about something or anything like that, or maybe you think I'm just being stupid and that you don't need this kind of philosophy, but just I'm just saying I don't only put out this much crap because I've got a lot of free time. I have a lot of free time because I put out this much crap. Let me put it that way around. You know, it's not my lifestyle of like having a job where I actually only work a few hours a month isn't something that leads to my lifestyle that I have now. It's my lifestyle that I have now which led to me traveling all over the world and having the job that I have and having the time to do what I do now. It's a bit of a strange thing, but that's what it comes down to. And all of this is informed by science fiction and by the creative outlook, and that is what is behind this podcast. That is why I do this podcast. Like I said before, I want to be a net exporter of intellectual property. The way that I used to do this back when I first started getting into performing juggling, I would put together, I remember back in 2003, I was putting together, my New Year's resolution was, I decided I'd put together a new act every, like six in one year. It just so happened that the first act that I put together was so good, I'm still performing it now, 7 years later, and it was that single routine which really gave me the confidence to be a professional juggler. However, I was thinking, and as I was doing this, it took me literally 2 months worth of work, of like really, really hard work, and I was putting together other acts at the same time. I once worked 8 months on a single 7-minute act. It was 8 months of my life went into this. I performed it twice and have never performed it again since. And I realized actually what I need to do is that I need to put time and effort into things that people are actually going to listen to, or they're going to hear, or they're going to watch, or they're going to see, or something like that, or they're going to consume. And the thing that I worked out was that I need to be able to, the amount of time that I put into it, say this podcast, I'm going to read a book. This is really easy now with an audiobook. It's going to take me 20 hours to listen to the book, you know, and then it's going to take me maybe 2 hours of really hard thinking about stuff that I'm going to say. I'm going to, you know, mull it over. Of course, I'll be doing other stuff at the same time. And then it'll take me an hour to record the podcast. And I actually timed it. It takes me, since I can press stop and I can upload the podcast and it'll be in the feed within 7 minutes, I think it was when I timed it once. So again, but let me just say 25 hours and stuff like that. So I would still think it was worth me doing this podcast, even if I only had 25 listeners, because that's 25 hours worth of other people's time and enjoyment and entertainment and edification for the 25 hours of my time that I put into it. Now, the good thing is about podcasting, it's really easy. Well, it's not easy. It's no more difficult. It's no more effort for more people to listen to it. So, for example, the last episode that I put up, it was just, I think, about a week ago, Patrick Rothfuss's The Name of the Wind review. There's now 1,300 downloads of that episode in a week. So, like I say, that's a really, really, really good investment of my time. And that's what I always think. Every time that I'm not quite sure if I can be bothered to do a podcast or I'm putting it off, I just think, no, there's going to be like 1,000 people who are going to listen to me talk for 40 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour long. And they're going to get that much that much time times the amount of audience listening to it of enjoyment out of what I do. And again, I don't... So when I say that this isn't self-indulgent, I think it is self-indulgent, but it's also other people indulgent. I can let other people indulge in what I'm doing. So maybe this is going to be the least downloaded episode ever. And actually, by the length of it and the waffling that I've done here, it probably will be. Anyway, email me, luke@juggler.net, with any feedback. Follow me on Twitter. I do lots of, like I've told you here, all these other projects that I'm working on. I always mention them on Twitter, so you can follow me there. I'm @LukeBurge on Twitter. You can see what I'm reading on goodreads.com/LukeBurge. Become my friend or follow my reviews. I'm not quite sure what the difference is if you become a follower of my reviews or become a friend, but become my friend anyway, because then I can see what you're reading too. Otherwise, all of my projects that I do and talk about on the podcast, I do a lot more, and I post it all on my blog. So go to lukeburge.com/blog. And also /fiction.html on my website too, to get hold of my novels and download them and read them there. That's it. Thanks a lot for listening. As I said, next episode out, we'll be back to normal. And so I'll catch you then.